Welcome to the Connect You podcast, where we interview guests who have transformed their lives, whether in mind, body, health, or wealth. Connect You seeks to discover what drives people and makes them extraordinary. Brought to you by Lewis Jackson, who brings you exciting real-life stories, hot topics, and the truth.
So on today's episode, we have Tim Matcham, also known as the Property Finance Coach. He has raised over £2.5 million in private finance. He is a Team Dynamics Certified Trainer and a Property Mastermind Platinum Graduate. Tim has accomplished 3 marathons, and his latest was at the age of 50. Tim also has an Amazon bestseller, How to Attract Armchair Investors, which I highly recommend that you go and read. And he's also, in my opinion, and certainly in the opinion of many others, one of the best mentors in the property industry. Tim, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Lewis, thank you very much indeed for inviting me. And there's one slight addition that I'm going to add to that, that the number now in terms of how much I've raised is actually probably near about £3.5 million.
Really?
So I'm still actively involved in raising finance for property, although I think it's fair to say I've slowed down a little bit. So,
all right, so my apologies, £3.5 million.
It's a number, it's just a number.
Numbers on a calculator, but that's absolutely fantastic. And what sort of a time period was that, Tim, that you've been?
I guess I started probably about 6 or 7 years ago now. So yeah, it's over quite an extended time. There was a flurry of activity for about 2 or 3 years when the bulk of that was done. But I think, I don't know, as the years have gone by, I've been able to say no to more things and be more diligent, if you like, in what I say yes to. And so it means that the choices that I make are better serving me. When I started out, I was like, let's go for everything. Let's take everything on board. And that gave me lots of learning experiences. I use the word learning experiences. Other people might use disasters, failures, challenges that had me in above my neck. But those were learning experiences. They were opportunities to move my experience forward. Okay. And I think that was one of my biggest kind of breakthroughs, if you like, was how I dealt with things that weren't going right. And there was a time when pretty much nothing was going right. And how you view that and how you use that is a critical part of who I am today.
And I know we've spoken briefly. I mean, this is we've known each other a little while. We've briefly touched upon this on a previous call, and I do want to talk about that. But what I'd like to do with my guests is sort of strip everything back to the beginning. Where did it start for you? What was your childhood like growing up?
Childhood, golly. I'm the eldest of two children. And quite a, going right back to my childhood, a real little goody two shoes, you know. Not a hair out of place. you know, did what I was told when I was told to do it. We had as far as I knew it at the time, a normal upbringing. I was kind of lucky, I suppose, in that I had parents who were caring and together. You know, my parents actually were married for 62 years. So, you know, pretty amazing to have that solid kind of family background. But then there were, you know, when I was nine, I went away to boarding school. And that was quite a big challenge because effectively looking back, to all intents and purposes, I left home at the age of nine. And that creates, you know, quite a different thing. I mean, I lost my father just literally a year ago. And just reflecting back on that time, you know, it raises the question of how well he knew me. Because, you know, having gone away to school at the age of nine, you know, he was busy with his business. We did have holidays and stuff together, but there wasn't that closeness, I don't think, from the age of nine. And I used to joke that my parents used to think I was still nine, even when I was like 59. I'm still 59. I'm going to be 60 this year. So, it's almost like I never left home, you know, that I never grew up. And that's been, whether that's just in my head, I don't know, but it's something that I have reflected on, as how well my father in particularly knew me. And I don't know that he ever really got to know me properly. And conversely, I don't think I ever really got to know him properly either.
Do you feel like that's affected you at all? Your mental health, your mental state of mind?
I think it possibly has an impact, because going back about 20 years, I had a nervous breakdown. And I was always taught to believe that we couldn't fail at anything. You know, if you're in a private school environment, you know, it's a very privileged sort of place to be. And we were, as I say, I didn't know any different. You know, World War III could have been going on down the road and we really wouldn't have had a clue. It was a very insular, very isolated kind of existence. But when you don't know any different, that's what your life is. But it meant that when I had a breakdown, there was nobody in my immediate circle who had the first idea of how to cope with it. Because, well, you pick yourself up, you dust yourself down, and you carry on regardless. You know, that very stiff upper lip, British stiff upper lip, which, you know, we're taught to kind of suppress our emotions and not to let those feelings out, and, you know, come on, pull yourself together kind of attitude, which, when you've had a total loss of self-esteem, is actually quite a difficult place to get yourself back into, you know, because nothing that you knew before that makes any kind of sense at all.
So you kind of wanted like an arm and shoulder, really. Is that what you felt like
you
was missing?
Yeah. There was nobody that I could talk to who had any idea of what I was experiencing or what I was going through in my kind of world at that time. And I think it's difficult for men in particular. You know, women have a knack of being able to talk about things, about the challenges that they're facing, much more easily than men do. We tend to be more reserved. And, you know, I think, you know, it's a great shame that there isn't a more open platform for people to share their emotions and, you know, to wear their heart on their sleeve a little bit more, and to be able to open up, particularly, you know, at the moment we're in, you know, at the time of recording, we're in another lockdown for COVID. Yeah. you know, people are isolated. There isn't that ability to go out and have physical human contact with anybody outside of your immediate home. And, you know, although there's the inevitable kind of pandemic challenge that's going on at the moment in terms of our health and obviously not succumbing to the virus, I actually think there will be a far longer legacy of mental health problems created by the coronavirus, which will not be evident for a number of years.
I completely agree. And I
think that, you know, that we'll see a massive fallout of people who, for whatever reason, simply can't cope. And, you know, there were some studies done, I think, back in the 50s, where with orphaned babies, where they separated the two groups of babies out, and one they simply fed and watered, and they had no physical contact with the outside world. And the other group, they picked up and they spent time with, and they hugged, and they cared for and loved those children. Now, the experiment was actually stopped, but too late for some of the babies, because they literally died of lack of love and lack of physical contact and that, which is tragic, really. But I think we're in danger of having that same experience. And it's not just babies, it's adults. We need that interaction with, you know, we're a social species. We work on being able to have contact with other people. Yeah. A lot of people I've spoken to are really suffering from that lack of physical contact with other people. And I think we're going to see a massive fallout of that.
Agree more. It's something I'm struggling with. I know that obviously members of my family are, and just going to put it out there now, if anyone else is, please obviously get in contact with myself. And I know that you are a massive advocate of mental health. Please, anyone else, get in contact with Tim, and he's got massive platforms out there that we can reach out to. And what I want to kind of touch on now, Tim, is why don't you start by sort of explaining what the property finance coach means? Because we've kind of touched on your early years. Which is fantastic. I mean, you've kind of briefly touched on that. And now tell me a little bit more about your property finance coach and what it means to you and what it means to everyone else.
Yeah. So, my property journey started when I ran the New York Marathon back in 2011. And as you said at the top of the show, that I was 50 at the time. And I came back from that thinking, what else can I do with my life? You know, I'd been able to achieve getting to the finish, which given that I wasn't fit, was you know, a major achievement. And you know, the story of the marathon is a whole nother story, which will, you know, if people are interested, they can perhaps you know, dig into later. But what it triggered for me was a desire to explore what my options were going forward. And one thing led to another. I ended up at a property meeting and I ended up trying to find out what my pension was worth, and discovered that it was going to be worth an absolute pittance, not now, but in 15 years time. And that's going back nearly 10 years now. So I recognized that I needed to do something radically different to what I was doing at the time, which I was involved in horticulture and garden design, and I recognized that I was literally going to be digging my own grave if I carried on with what I was doing. You know, the old adage that if you keep doing the same stuff, you're going to keep getting the same results. And so it was very important that I did something different. But because of a business failure that I'd had back in 2000, I didn't have money in the bank. In fact, I had rather a big hole in my bank account. Now, most people will tell you if you don't have funds available, you can't buy property. And I didn't want to let that hold me back. So I learnt how to work with other people's money. But I learnt the hard way. There wasn't anybody to tell me how to do it. I had to figure it out for myself. But I had to figure it out from a position of, I have to do this because I've got no other choice. I don't have money in the bank, so I can't use my money. Got to use somebody else's in order to be able to do that. After a while, I figured that actually the process that I was using could help other people. And that's where the book came in. And being able to share what was working for me with other people opened my eyes to the fact that actually this didn't just work for me, it worked for other people as well. And I was getting great feedback from the book to say, Tim, this is great stuff. It's very empowering. It's very enlightening. We'd like to talk to you about the possibility of mentoring. So that's where the mentoring side of it came in. Because I take a very holistic view, because I don't think you can look at the raising finance in isolation, I started looking at it very holistically, meaning that all aspects of my life and my client's life was kind of taken into account, if you like, when we were looking at this. Because actually, I worked out that it wasn't the project, the property that people were investing in, it was you as an individual. So for the most part, people are investing in me as an individual and my clients as individuals. So understanding who they were and what drove them became a critical part of it. And that got me asking questions about who they were, what their purpose in life was, where they were going, what they were doing, which was transformative for them, because it was the first time for many of them that they'd actually stopped and thought about those questions. So when you suddenly start taking something as, in inverted commas, simple as raising private finance, but then you open up the world in which that sits, you open up a whole world of possibility. And that, for me, was the exciting breakthrough. Was that this wasn't just about helping people to raise finance, it was about helping people to transform their lives. And I think, you know, when you get that sort of feedback from clients to say, Tim, you completely transformed my life, then getting up in the morning becomes a real pleasure and a real joy, because you're impacting them as individuals, their families, the people around them. You know, and that's just extraordinary. That's kind of why I do it, is, you know, I'm a very people person. People matter to me. So to be able to be blessed with that, you know, I'm lucky enough now that I don't have to work, but I do it because I love it. And to be able to transform somebody's life makes a massive difference. But I now choose the way that I do it, and I'm not a kind of slave to it as I perhaps was maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
It's fascinating. You said that you was in sort of, you had a project that went bad and you was maybe in some debt. Do you care to touch on how did that sort of come about, and how did you get out of that situation? Because to many people out there, they may be thinking, how did you even get into property with no money, or even you was in debt? How did you do that?
Yeah, so I'm a great believer that you always have options. So even if it's a simple yes, no. So once you start taking that on board, it was a case of, okay, I don't have the necessary skills myself to do all of this, but I can use the skills that I do have, because we're all born with an inner genius. The challenge is, as Einstein pointed out, was that, you know, we all have this inner genius, but if you measure a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it'll go through its entire life believing it's stupid. Now, tragically, most people are fish trying to climb trees. Our education system gears people to be fish trying to climb trees. You know, if you're bad at maths at school, they don't say, forget maths. They say, have extra maths lessons, you know, do detention, have more maths. We're gonna make your life an absolute misery by making you do more maths because you're bad at it. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
been there, done that, got that t-shirt. You know, and so we carry on that through our lives, you know, because we've been indoctrinated with that way of thinking. Now, in a schooling environment, it helps to get everybody to a reasonable level. I get that. But the thinking that got us to the end of school isn't going to get us to the next level. And what I encourage people to do is to dial into their zone of genius and get better at that. The things that we are good at, get better at it. And find other people who are good at doing the things that we're not so good at. So when I got involved in property, for me, finding properties that met the right criteria is not what I do. Managing buildings, you know, managing the build, the refurbishment, whatever, it's not what I do. You know, so I had to find things that I was good at, that I could do, and get and work with other people to do the bits that I couldn't do, or not so much couldn't do, but didn't have a flair for and didn't enjoy doing.
She was looking at people and their expertise, really.
Yeah, and I, you know, I'm a Christian. Jesus had 12 disciples. You know, he didn't do it all himself. He had a team of people there to go out and spread the word. If the main man needed a bit of help, then I'm absolutely sure that I do. You know, it's, you know, and I think, you know, property can be a very lonely business. You know, it can be very isolating, even when we're not in COVID. So getting that team of people around you, of people that can help you and support you is vital. Now, did I get into bed and with the right people all the way through? No, I didn't. You know, I made some errors of judgment, but those errors of judgment actually, on reflection, were massive learning opportunities that allowed me to refine what I do and decide on the way forward. So using those learning opportunities to learn so that I could do something different next time. And so many people have the learning experiences but don't reflect on them so that they can't do something different next time. And they keep doing the same thing and the same thing, the same thing. They don't make any progress. They get deflated. They get, you know, just so frustrated with the lack of progress, but actually they're not really thinking about what they need to do and where they need to go. You know, just at the beginning of February now, you know, I spent the weekend reflecting on January. What went well? What could I do better? And what do I want to take forward into February, and just kind of monitoring where I'm up to. You know, am I making the forward progress that I want to in about five or six different areas of my life? You know, am I making progress? Am I growing? You know, I'm investing in my own education, in my own knowledge. I've just joined a new group. I've got a mastermind group. I've got an accountability partner, fresh new for this year. Just looking to push myself and stretch myself the whole time, because if we're not growing, we're dying. But it's important to do that with support and people around you who are on the same kind of mission, that same trajectory that you are, so that you've got support rather than people deriding you and trying to pull you back down to their level. Because that's the danger, you know, if you start to move away, particularly from your friends, you know, they'll try and beat you back down again to their level because you're making them feel uncomfortable.
So for what you say to someone starting out, they've got sort of got no experience, what would you sort of say to someone? Obviously, they've taken your learnings into account. What would you say to someone that's looking to get started in property?
I think the best kind of investment that you can make is in your education. You know, yes, you can do it without education, and there's loads of kind of material, if you like, out there on the internet, YouTube and any number of Facebook groups and stuff. But you have to ask yourself, you know, how well qualified is that information? You know, if anybody's proffering you advice, it's their opinion of what they think you should be doing. It doesn't necessarily follow that what they're doing is right for you. And that's the danger, is being able to differentiate it out. So be sure about where you're getting your education from. Do it for the right reasons. Most of the courses will tell you how to do something, but they don't focus on the why. Why are you actually doing it? You need to look at that first. Why is something important to you? What outcome are you looking to achieve? You know, a lot of people get into property and they go, well, I haven't got any money, therefore I'll do X strategy, without really having a view as to what the end picture is going to look like. So they're taking what they think is the easy route to begin with, but actually potentially going to cause them problems further down the line, because they've gone into it for entirely the wrong reason. When I was running the New York Marathon, my legs stopped working at mile 10. My goal that day was to get to the finish line. But if that had been the only thing that had been driving me, I would have stopped at mile 10, because I could have gone and done another marathon another day. But my purpose, my reason why, was that I was raising money for charity, for Asthma UK, in memory of a friend's 10-year-old daughter who tragically lost her life to asthma. That compelled me to put one foot in front of the other, regardless of how badly my legs were working, how much pain I was in. You know, so that reason why drives you even when the going gets tough. And most people, you know, I can read any number of books on how to run a marathon, but actually when it comes to it, if I haven't got the right motivation for doing it, I'm never going to do it. And 90% of getting to the end of a marathon isn't in your legs and your body, it's in your mind. It's the same with property. If you've got the right motivation and the right driver, you are going to experience obstacles. You know, a great saying that I have is, obstacles are not in the way, they're on the way. You should expect to have obstacles they're going to be there. And if your purpose is strong enough, you'll find a way around those obstacles or over them. If it's not strong enough, you won't. You haven't got a hope. Because the first challenge that you face, you'll give up, you'll stop, because it's too difficult, it's too hard. You know, if property was easy, everybody'd be doing it. It's not, it's hard. It's hard to make it work properly. So you've got to be really clear about why you're doing it and what your expectations are from it. But if you've got that and you've got that drive, you can make anything work. But it's you've got to start from the right place. And the reason so many people, and this is my personal opinion here, the reason so many people don't succeed at property is because they haven't got that mindset in the right place to start with, which is why I focus so strongly on the mindset, because actually there's any number of people will tell you how to do something, but actually the how is the last thing you need. If everything else is in place, the how becomes easy.
Your mindset is appeared to be very strong. And can you tap into your mindset? You're, from what you've achieved, you're obviously raising 3.5 million, or over 3.5 million pounds now. You obviously, you've run numerous marathons. You've attracted countless investors, but there seems to be this continuous progression throughout your life. Tell me a little bit about your mindset, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, so my mindset, as I said, I had a nervous breakdown 21 years ago now. I was literally left in curled up in a ball crying for 6 months. And at that time, I didn't have anything or anybody that could really help me, support me. You know, my wife was busy bringing up four children. We just had our fourth child. So, you know, her attentions were very much geared towards helping the children, you know, and making sure they were all right. So, you know, I was kind of left to get on with it myself. And I was initially, because we didn't know any different, because I didn't know any different, I was put on lots of medication. And in hindsight, I wish, you know, if I could go back, I wouldn't have gone on the medication, but I didn't know any different. And I think this is where I started thinking that, you know, there are always choices. We just need to know what the choices are. We need to understand what the options are at every different phase. Fast forward about 15 years, so about 5 to 6 years ago from where we are today, I was in a really, really dark place. So I was in a, you know, when people talk about there being always being a light at the end of the tunnel, well, for me, there was no light. And my epiphany came when I got a message from God to say, Tim, you are good enough to be the light. And in that moment, my whole world changed about 180 degrees. Because from not being able to see the way forward and being very heavily reliant on other people to provide that light for me, to show me where to go, I realized that actually I was enough as I was, that I didn't need other people there to be my light. I was good enough to be that light. Now, what I also know is that if I'm good enough to be the light, so is everybody else. I'm not special. I'm a human being, same as everybody else is. And so for me, being able to share that message with other people, that they are good enough, we've just got to work on what the good enough is. You know, where is that genius? And the challenge for most people is that the things that we find easiest to do are the things that we are most prone to overlooking. Because we find them easy, we don't attach any value to them, because surely if we can do them that easily, so can everybody else. And actually what I discovered was that the things that I found easy, other people found difficult. And conversely, things that I found difficult, other people found easy.
What do you mean? Can you elaborate on that? Because sometimes I might not understand what you mean. So what did you find easy that other people found difficult?
So the things that I find easy were to be able to articulate how I feel and how I can communicate with other people. So for me, that connection, that ability to connect, for me, is very easy. If I go into a room of maybe 200 people on a networking, most people would regard that as being hell on earth. For me, it's heaven, you know. And the number of times that I've been talking to somebody and they've been saying, oh, I'm a builder. And then I'll turn around and talk to somebody else and say, I'm looking for a builder. And you go, hang on just 2 seconds. I'll introduce you because I've just literally been talking 2 minutes ago to a builder who's local to the area, who's looking for work, he's skilled in what you're looking for. And those two people would never have met if I hadn't been able to connect with them. Now, that comes naturally to me. I do that very easily. I don't have to think about it. I don't have to, you know, go into a zone or anything. I'm in that space the whole time. And that's just a very simple example. But I make connections very easily. So much so that I have to slow myself down sometime in order to help, to allow other people to catch up with it. You know, sometimes I can be so far ahead because I've made connection after connection after connection with maybe, you know, a storyline or something. It's why I find it so difficult to tell jokes, because I'm at the punchline already in my head. and so it comes out as a meaningless garble that nobody can understand, but I'm already on to the next thing. So it has its drawbacks, but it's harnessing that energy in a way that is beneficial for other people. So being able to connect ideas, connect people, to connect things is very, very powerful. So that connecting ability. Now, conversely, process, systems, structure, completely alien to me. I know they are beneficial. I know they are helpful. I know they're going to work in my favor. But can I get my head around a system or a process or structure of any sort? No, absolutely not. Just can't do it. So I have to have people in my team for whom that is natural and easy and something they can do without thinking about. Because it's not my zone of genius.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. I find it very natural in a way that we're going to connect yourself with other people. Connecting with people, that's what I love to do. I love to connect with people and find out their stories. Another question that I think everyone wants to hear is, how did you attract the investors and where did you find the deals?
Well, let's take that in reverse. So I hooked up with some people who were much more experienced property investors than myself, who were finding deals, you know, pretty much every month. So they were getting some great deals coming through. The thing that was holding back was their ability to finance those deals. Now, I kind of leveraged their skill and their experience to be able to, if you like, build them up, so that when I was talking to investors, it wasn't, you know, I was selling the benefit of working with these amazing people because they had all this experience and they knew what they were doing. So it was creating, it was understanding what people wanted from an investment in the first instance. So why would they invest? And then creating a story and a brand around who they were investing with. And once we'd done that, there was a queue of people waiting to get involved. You know, they could see that there was great synergy and great experience within that group that was investable.
So you created certainty.
Yeah. We created a scenario where, you know, we got great projects going through that were being managed by an experienced team, and that allowed them to do the things that they were good at and me to do the things that I was good at. So just by combining skills, it allowed us to share that with the wider world. So I used my connections to be able to leverage other people's skills. Now, anybody can do that. No, that's not special to me. It's understanding where your strengths are and playing to those strengths and surrounding yourself with people that can support those strengths in whatever areas you're not so strong on. And once you get that, you can build that kind of environment and that story, that brand that will lift you and all the people that you're working with. Like I say, it's much easier to do with other people.
So what would you be your greatest achievement in property so far?
Greatest achievement in property. Great question. I think the greatest achievement that I've made is literally the property that we're buying right now. We've kind of looked at all of the different options that we have available to us, going a slightly different route, but we're going that route for all the right reasons. And it's a good, solid investment. Again, using investor finance, using a team of people, but it's moving more into social housing rather than kind of like the high-end commercial HMOs or single buy-to-lets that have kind of dominated what I've done previously. So this is a slight departure, but everything feels right about it. So we've kind of combined all of the effort and the energy and the learnings that we've had previously and putting it into something that's a more, I wouldn't say solid investment, but it's the right investment for where we are now and for what we're doing now. And I think some of the other ones maybe weren't. So it's using that learning and progressing and taking things forward the whole time that's so important. So yeah, my latest project, I think, is probably the greatest one, you know, and I hope that the one that follows that will be the greatest after that. You know, associated with property, obviously writing a book has been amazing, and, you know, doing the mentoring is you know, still what floats my boat, you know, and to be able to transform people's lives is, I guess, the most special thing.
It kind of leads me to the next question: what was the most valuable piece of information, valuable piece of information that someone's given yourself, or nicest comment that someone's ever given you? Because you've done the mentoring and you've been through the educational system, if you like.
There's quite a lot to choose from, which is nice. I'm flattered by that. But I work with a lady out in America. She was a Jamaican immigrant who'd been unemployed for 3 years, and came up with all the excuses and all the reasons why she couldn't get a job and wasn't worth anything. And she ended up setting up her own interior design business. And she also was motivated to set up a children's home back in Jamaica. Now, for a number of reasons, the children's home in Jamaica has had to take a bit of a back seat, but she wanted to call it after me. So she wanted to call it Matcham House, which I would say is a pretty, you know, that's the kind of level of impact I've had on her. So that's a pretty good. I hope that she does get to actually physically create it, and I hope that I'll be able to go out there and visit it. I persuaded her against calling it after me, but the fact.
Well, no, that's fantastic. That's absolutely fantastic.
The fact that she wanted to, I think, it's amazing.
That's so great.
but this is it. If you can impact other people in such a positive way, that she then goes out and creates a children's care home and education establishment. I haven't just helped that one person. I've impacted a whole community just through that. And similarly with some of my clients in the UK, just by, you know, frequently people are 90% of the way to achieving success themselves. But it's one of the examples I use is one of those like Chinese metal ring puzzles, which the two rings come apart. You know that they come apart, but can you get them to come apart? And then somebody shows you how to do it and they come apart effortlessly. And it's just that last little alignment that you need to get right in order for it to work. And that's the tiny bit that I add, but it makes all the difference to everything.
Sets you free.
Yeah. It literally takes the shackles off, you know, and it's a bit, you know, if you've got a combination code on a safe, you know, you can have one digit that's one digit out, and that's not enough. You're not going to open the safe. But if you just click it around one click and you get it right, the contents of the safe are yours. And it's just making those tiny little adjustments and being able to look at it from a kind of helicopter perspective and to be able to say, well, hang on a minute, are you sure you're going the right way? I was talking to somebody just the other day who is, you know, a real go-getter. And we were talking about exercise, and he was talking about how he was increasing all his exercise and he was ramping this up and ramping that up. And I said, that's great that you're doing that, but how do you know you're doing the right exercise? I've got a personal trainer. Yeah, but is that personal trainer, does that personal trainer know that what your body type is and that different body types have a different need for different types of training? And therefore, although you're doing some great work with your physical training, how do you know it's the right training for you, for your body type? And there was just a dumbfounded silence at the end of it. But here's the thing, you know, at any level, when we go up, whatever got us to where we are now isn't going to get us to the next level. You know, the thinking and the actions that got us to where we are today aren't going to get us to the next level, because we'll reach a ceiling without thinking and that mindset and those actions. And once we reach that ceiling, we're stuck. We're going to stay in that place. So we need to do something to change our thinking to be able to move to the next level. And if we can grasp that, you know, I mean, Napoleon Hill's book, classic book, Think and Grow Rich, you know, yes, the language is used that he uses is nearly 100 years out of date. And it's, you know, saw something the other day that, you know, people, yeah, perfect. You know, yes, some of the language is a bit outdated, but it's from a period in time. The core essence of what's in there is still as valid today, if not more so, than it's ever been. And that ability to think about what our future is and affect our mindset is, I don't know, it's kind of why I'm setting up a new online course about mindset, because without it and that ability to think, it changes everything. But often with thinking, you need somebody to challenge your thinking rather than for you to challenge it. It's easier to have somebody else to just challenge the way that you're thinking. Because like I say, what the thinking that got you to where you are now isn't going to get you to where you want to get to.
I mean, from where you've come from, obviously at boarding school, you didn't necessarily feel loved. You felt there was something potentially missing. You needed that arm around the shoulder. And then sort of growing up, you had the bad experience with that project. Obviously, you fell into debt, maybe like £100,000 in debt. You come out the other side of that. You shifted your mindset, which I think people need to look at, and they need to follow your journey. You then got into property, and you've leveraged other people's experience, time, and you've utilized other people's skills as well, and your own experiences and your expertise.
Yeah.
And you've now managed to live life on your own terms. Where can people find you, and how can they find you and connect with you?
I mean, thanks for that. And I'm still growing, incidentally. I'm still expanding. I'm not satisfied with where I am. I still want to take it to another level up. So I'm continually growing. People can find me. I'm on LinkedIn. There aren't too many Tim Matchams around, so it's very easy to connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm also on Facebook and on Instagram. And I don't know whether we can share maybe in the notes some links. If people wanted to book a call with me, we'll share a link that people can book a discovery call and just spend kind of half an hour on the phone or Zoom. And, you know, very welcome to have that half an hour chat. There's no charge. I'm really keen to engage with people and just to find out if there is anything that I can do to help them, to inspire them. My great motto is to ignite greatness in others. If I can do that, then, you know, that's success for me.
You certainly have me, and I'm sure you certainly will with many others. And obviously, I know for a fact that you have with a lot of other people. Tim, it's been fantastic having you on the show. I do hope to have you back in a couple of months' time, if you do have the time. Are you willing to come back on the show?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Always happy to come and share any insights and the challenges that we all face, you know, particularly as we you know, go through, and we're all learning about COVID and, you know, what the future might bring. So, I've got some big plans for 2021.
Fantastic.
And I'd love to share those.
Fantastic. We'll talk about the new plans in a couple of months time. Tim, thank you very much for coming on, and I can't wait to have you back on.
Thanks very much indeed, Lewis.
Thank you for listening to the Connect You podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share this on your socials, tag me, and leave a review.